Next case is 96-108, Richard Perez, M.D. versus Frank P. Cleveland, M.D. Mr. Perry.
If it pleases the court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes. In the 1993 decision in Perez versus Cleveland, the court made several points, one of which was that the Perez complaint for declaratory judgment states a cause of action. The revised code 313.19 is the proper way to challenge the coroner's determination. That the Perez has set a real and justiciable issue, and that the common police court had jurisdiction to hold here and decide the matter. The issue of the constitutionality of 313.19 was not before the court in the 1993 decision. On remand, went to the trial court. The trial court relied upon Mark versus Lyle, which relied upon Dan versus Herbert, found that 313.19 was unconstitutional. On appeal, the appellate court found no reason to revisit their earlier holding in Mark versus Lyle and affirmed the trial court. While the issue was on appeal, the part-time court of appeals decided Seabird versus Wood. And as you can imagine, Seabird versus Wood in that decision raises the reason that we have not agreed. I will either confer the constitutionality of the statute.
Mr. Perry, why would they be fighting this so? You know, this is the second time it's been all the way up here, and you still don't have a decision. And I thought in the Perez case in 66, Ohio State 3397, we were pretty clear on what ought to be done and said that this is the only way you could possibly get it done. What benefit is there to fight it? Is there going to never be any way, according to the other side, that you can change the coroner's determination of death?
Well, if they would prevail, what you would do is we wind up in a situation where the Perez's would be denied their constitutional right of the right of access to the courts.
Or anybody else seeking to change a coroner's decision. But is there, what would the reason be? I know I can ask this of the other side, and may, but I'm wondering from your standpoint, why would they be fighting so hard to not give an independent tribunal an ability to look at whether the coroner makes a right decision on whether this was a suicide or a homicide?
Well, my view is that the coroners have enjoyed
natural causes
from review. In other words, the coroner's decision up until present time has not been subject to review by a court. They were their own Supreme Court. They were not subject to review.
But the statute was always there.
Well, then they relied upon Dana versus Berger, which was an older case that did not take into consideration the declaratory judgment, so the procedure. So
you don't know why?
I really don't.
Except they don't want to be second-guessed.
I know it's a hard-fought battle. It's been going on for a long time, and it's not a money issue. It's just an issue. Change the death record from asphyxiation, homicide, to natural causes because it's a sin to death. I know that the Seabird court did not have the benefit of, or did have the benefit of, Barber versus Travelers and the Perez decision in Goldsby. But in spite of those decisions, the Cleveland team is arguing that the statute is deficient because it does not provide a procedure to implement it. But we look upon 313.19 as conferring the right. It's a remedial statute and it's the right of access to the courts. When this court talks about the declaratory judgment being available, the civil rules of procedure being the rules of procedure that apply, this court is not trying to supplement that statute or amend it. The court is simply exercising its prerogatives. In connection with Article 4, Section 5, this court has the right to impose rules on the courts in the state of Ohio, and that's what this court has done. It's not trying to amend 313.19. The other major point that the court seems to be making is that the burden of proof is somehow skewered. That possibly the coroner's determination should enjoy the status that it's not overcome unless clear and convincing evidence is presented to the contrary. Well, that's not what this court has said. This court has said that a coroner's determination as to the matter of motive burden of proof on coroners. One of the other issues that Dr. Cleveland raises is the issue of mootness, in fact, that they say that the court has no way of enforcing the declaratory judgment decision. You cannot order the coroner to change his findings. Well, I know the court's well familiar with the declaratory judgment. 27-2109 provides for further relief. Further relief can be in the form of money damages, it can be in the form of attorney's fees, or it can be in the form of net damages. So that there is a way for the court to come and please enforce their decision in court for a judgment.
Injunctive relief.
Mandamus was in the statute, but I think the statute also says in any other means it can be injunctive. So that's our argument. We embrace the reasoning of Seaver versus Courts.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please report? With the court's permission, I'd like to respond to the question raised by Justice Douglas earlier, and that is, why does Dr. Cleveland continue to contest this? Dr. Cleveland, as you know, is the coroner of Hamilton County until recently, for approximately 30 years, and now Dr. Carl Parrott is his successor, does not remain as part of his loss again. But essentially, because the statute in question here fails in four respects, it doesn't tell us how to review the coroner's decision, doesn't tell us who can review it, or who can bring the action to review it, it doesn't tell us when, and it doesn't tell us what. What burden of proof do you require in this case? And again, to respond to arguments raised earlier, we are arguing that if this court fills in the how, the who, and the when, the what becomes very important. What burden of proof must the plaintiffs bear in this case? This court has recognized that a coroner is a quasi-judicial official, has a renders medical opinions about medical matters. To require the trial court to look at this again with a mere preponderance of the evidence is to essentially tell the trial court there's no more credence given to that coroner than any other opinion.
Well, so is a court of appeals, not just quasi-judicial, they are judicial, and they're often reversed on a 4-3 decision on the basis of preponderance of the evidence. Why should it be clear and convincing or beyond a reasonable doubt in this case?
Because otherwise you're going to be put in a position that the trial court may be put in this position, that is, three pathologists are going to come in and say, we believe the cause of death was homicide. Not a natural cause. Dr. Herrick, Dr. Cleveland, Dr. Bonnell, who is the chief deputy, are going to come in and say, we believe it was homicide.
Well, what's wrong with that? Don't we do that every day, 50 times a day, in courts across the state?
And the other thing that coroners do when they reach these quasi-judicial decisions is they frankly rely on a lot of evidence that is not quote judicial evidence that might be barred by the rules of evidence. Their investigation, background information, things which a quasi-judicial agency can properly consider. And if you're going to afford to the coroner that special expertise that this court has referred to, then his opinion, his findings, should also bear that special weight.
Is it fair to say that if we follow your line of argument and what you want us to hold, that never, forevermore, can a coroner's decision as to cause of death, entry on a death certificate, be questioned by anybody? Your four questions. Nobody, no place, no time, ever.
I have two responses to the question, Your Honor. One, that's not true if the legislature revises this statute and plugs in the things that...
Today, Counselor, today.
Today. The statute...
Non-reviewable. Absolute plenary authority and discretion. Nobody can look at a coroner's decision.
Because the statute is so vague as to give us no standard to do that.
Kind of like the coroner's case we just had out of Hancock County in Findlay, where the coroner decided by himself that he was not going to file public records in any case of suicide. He said, I don't have to do that. I'm the final word. Well, we thought that probably wasn't right, didn't we?
I understand the court's position, and that, I think that leads us to our second point, that if you plug in the how and the who and the when and those questions, you still have to address the what. That is, what weight do you give to the coroner's opinion? Because this statute has been before the court a number of times before.
Why should it have any special weight? I'm not even following. I know you're calling it quasi-judicial, et cetera, but if the whole purpose of having the coroner and having coroner reports is really to benefit the citizens, isn't it? Why do we need to have this elevated status for simply a medical opinion that can be challenged on this? I would say you're talking a regular preponderance on a factual issue. Just so happens it's an expert-driven factual issue. What's so special about this?
I guess that because this is a special statutory proceeding, and 313.19 says that the coroner's verdict for the death certificate shall be the legally accepted manner and mode in which such death occurred, and the legally accepted cause of death. That's the legislative definition of the importance of the coroner's rule. Now, this court has already ruled that legally accepted only means it's essentially a presumption. They've already addressed that in its the due process.
It facilitates the way we have to operate in society. It's a facilitating thing, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. But this court has also, in its prior rulings, addressed the coroner as this quasi-judicial officer, and stated that they are essentially a medical expert testifying about a medical question. And I think basically does not want to put trial courts in the business of reviewing every death certificate to determine whether or not they should or should not be reviewed. If there's a purpose to be served in having the coroner reach a verdict that addresses the legal cause of death, then there's also a purpose to be served by giving that coroner's decision special weight. Secondly, this court has in its prior ruling suggested that a declaratory judgment is the way, is the how to bring this action. And I've suggested in our, my predecessor suggested in our brief that flies in the face of some of the other rulings of this court. This procedure is a special statutory procedure. It's not a normal lawsuit, a personal injury case, or a contract action. And this court has most recently, in 1995, I believe, ruled that a general remedy, like declaratory judgment, cannot be used to circumvent special statutory procedures. That was State ex rel Smith versus Frost. In the Smith case, as well as the case involving Galleon versus Ashby, this court addressed issues where there was appeal from a labor arbitration or an appeal from an annexation petition, special sort of unusual statutory proceedings. And they said, you can't use declaratory judgments to address those type of cases. And I quote from Smith versus Frost, it is always inappropriate for courts to attempt to resolve matters committed to special statutory proceedings by using a declaratory judgment. Their decision should always be reversed on appeal, except when they dismiss the action. So I submit to the court that this statute is so vague because the how failed. You shouldn't be using a declaratory judgment in this special statutory proceeding. It doesn't tell us who could bring the action, or more importantly, who all should be made a party to that action because there may be interest in it. It doesn't tell us when. It gives us an unlimited statute of limitations that we could have coroner's decisions reviewed 10 or 15
months. Counsel, let's take your problems with this statute and say a parent or a spouse of the deceased comes to common pleas court, files a cause of action, saying that I am the spouse, former spouse. investigation. Names can be set forth. They're experts. Coroner's report is in error and should be revised. I bring this action pursuant to 313.19. That is a statutory. In other words, lays it out as a statutory proceedings.
Yes, sir.
In common police court. What problem is left other than burden of proof?
The burden of proof, when may they bring the stand the action? Is there going to be a statute of limitations to bring these actions today? Or do we, I guess we could fall back to the equitable doctrines of laches or something of that nature. But
so let's say they bring it within a year.
This case before you, the case was brought in a reasonable period. But the problem is the court is plugging into the statute all of those answers. And while this court is constrained to construe statutes in a manner which will uphold their constitutionality.
I mean, wouldn't it be better to say, okay, you waited 5 years to bring this, the coroner's gone, it's dead, you know, whatever. So throw it out because it's stale. Wouldn't attacking those, what's the problem with this particular cause of action that's in this case?
In this particular cause of action is the method that's going to be used and the burden of proof to be given.
The method.
The method. Whether or not declaratory judgment is appropriate.
Okay, so that would be solved if it were also just captured as a statutory action. I bring this action pursuant to 313.19. So you would then be down to burden of proof?
The Court of Appeals, which have addressed this issue earlier, have said that that's not sufficient. It doesn't tell us how or what procedures to use. And there are four appellate courts in the state of Ohio who have followed that direction.
I'm a police judge and try all kinds of complex cases every day. Don't you have some faith in the judiciary being able to unwind this and give your coroner an opportunity to say, well, you know, there ought to be greater weight. You acknowledge the burden of proof is on the moving party, so they have to get above 50% to convince a judge, and I think we could all assume that if it's that close to the line, the judge probably is not disturbed what's out there. Your essential problem really is burden of proof.
I think that's one of the essential problems. But obviously this statute has been wrestled with by this court and the appellate courts for almost 40 years. And it's present. And I think...
I guess I go to the larger point. Why so much resistance?
Candidly, Dr. Cleveland feels very strongly that he and Dr. Pinnell, when they reviewed the case, their finding as to the cause of death is correct. Secondly,
if they're that convinced, they ought to be comfortable convincing a common police judge that they're right.
And secondly, the feeling that the coroner's verdict should be given special weight, special credence.
But the General Assembly, I mean, you said that it is our function to interpret statutes as they're written. And what you're really asking us to do is to eliminate a portion of the statute in order to get this unbridled authority to the coroners. I mean, in essence, that's what you're asking us to do. You're saying it's void for vagueness, disregarded, yet the General Assembly in 40 years have never seen fit in all the cases that have been written on this statute to change it.
Your Honor, General Assembly hasn't seen fit to change it. I guess to respond to your question, we need to address the burden of proof, how to do that, and we need to address the when and where as well.
Counselor, let me do it a different way. Let's accept your argument. Statute's unconstitutional, it's gone, it's history. Where does it say in any statute that a person of who thinks they've been aggrieved cannot go to court to review the decision of a public official. Is there any place that says you can't go to court to question the coroner's decision?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right. So why should that be any different than any other cause of action under Article 1, Section 16, which says the court shall be open to redress the grievances of people? And let me make one more point, then I'll stop, if you will. If the coroner's decision would have been final, the General Assembly is not... it's not foreign to the General Assembly to know how to say that. We have in the case where county boards of elections tie 2-2. It goes to the Secretary of State. The statute says the Secretary of State shall cast a tie-breaking vote, and it is final. Now, we can argue about what is final, as the majority of this court has said. That doesn't preclude mandamus. But in any event, they know how to say it's final. Where does it say the coroner's decision is final and nobody ever can look at it? Throwing the statute out.
Throwing the statute out, there is nothing here. There are other statutory remedies that the plaintiffs could avail themselves of. And I see my time is up, Mr. Chief Justice, if I may briefly.
You may finish your answer. Yeah.
Conclude. There's a procedure whereby an affidavit can be filed with the Department of Health, State Department of Health, to challenge that form of verdict as well. So there are other statutory proceedings of administrative nature. In summary, Your Honors, we've asked this court to set aside, to affirm the decision of the First District Court of Appeals, and render Section 313.19 void in the Constitution.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Mr. Perry, you've saved about 9 minutes of your time.
Mr. Perry, why would you not avail yourself of the other statutory procedure permitting you to go through the administrative procedures and then appeal an adverse decision from that?
I don't think there's an administrative record to uphold with.
That's right.
A public hearing with regard to the coroner's determination, you never know.
Do you need any record to file an affidavit or complaint with the department saying that, in fact, the coroner's decision was wrong?
Well, if it's going to be an administrative appeal, there's supposed to be a record.
Well, but the record would be made at the administrative hearing on your complaint.
Well, I never gave it a lot of thought, Judge. I really thought that 313.19 is the most direct way to implement the Perez's rights.
Counsel, irrespective of what this court may have indicated earlier about this declaratory judgment, why wouldn't at least addressing one of the coroner's concerns, this just be brought couched as a statutory cause of action before the county police court, spelling out under the rules, notice pleadings, telling the coroner, here's why we're here, here's what we allege is wrong. Here's taking a step further, assuming somewhat like a medical malpractice case, setting forth your experts upon whom you are going to rely to face this challenge so that you don't have the argument that this is a frivolous claim. Do that in a timely fashion. Then doesn't the general, if you did that, wouldn't the general statute of limitations, there is a general statute of limitations where there is no specific provided in the code, is there not?
Well, yes, sir. No, territory judgment is considered equitable, at least in part, it's sui generis, and then that statute on equitable action is up to 10 years.
Well, I'm trying to take you away from declaratory judgment. So you follow the statute, you just say this is a statutory cause of action, I'm here bringing my statutory cause of action. Then there is something in the code that says, absent anything else, here's your statute of limitations. There's also a guide that says, absent anything else, preponderance of evidence standard applies. So wouldn't that cure all these arguments about the vagueness? I mean, that might not be the result that the coroner wants, but if you brought it that way,
you're saying is statutory cause of action, but this court has said in Fargo that the way you implemented is declaratory judgment. So it's a procedural.
I understand why you did what you did, but like, I'm trying to take this forward.
Well, I suppose there's a way to just file an action and say we have agreements with the coroner and we want to progress. It's not medical malpractice. It's not a tort. You know, it's difficult to put a label on it.
Well, it's a statutory cause of action. Here's the statute.
Which statute? The 313?
Yeah.
Well, yes. That's what we've done. We label it declaratory judgment, but I think what the court suggested, you don't have to label it declaratory judgment. Here we are. And we want to proceed by the rules of civil procedure. It makes no difference to me as long as I get to the corner and get an order causing you to change the certificate of death. That's the issue.
Not to make your argument for you, but don't you have an additional argument that, in fact, when your learned adversary raises the issue of how long are we going to know this to go on? I haven't looked it up recently, but I think it's around 2305.12 of the code says that if there's no statute of limitations provided, specifically, there's an omnibus provision, which is, I think, 4 years.
4 years?
So.
Oh, I heard it conceded that we were within a reasonable period of time, so I didn't want to start.
Well, but I mean, it's not like it's going to go on for 15 years.
That's all I got.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.